Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here, 7 past the hour. Welcome to tonight's program. About 10 minutes ago, I got an email from Occupy Oakland. It says it is now 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time here, and there's an urgent meeting being called by Occupy Oakland. All in earshot of this broadcast who are in the San Francisco Bay Area's East Bay, meet at 8th and Broadway now. With 3 or 4 exclamation points. Cops have blocked our progress and right to assemble so that we can march down Broadway. Everyone come. There's about 200 of us now, but we need more supporters. If you are in the Oakland, in the San Francisco area, you should answer this call from Occupy Oakland. They are in the San Francisco Bay Area's East Bay. Meet at 8th and Broadway now. Huh? It's going to take more than 200 people. Atlanta is next, I think, on the hit list. The mayor of Atlanta came out today and in a very pissed off kind of way said that the deal was over. Occupy Atlanta people are going to vacate the park where they've been staying. Apparently, last week, the mayor of Atlanta had said that the permit would extend till November 7th. Not the permit, but permission to stay at Woodruff Park in downtown Atlanta until October 7th, when the next city council meeting is. Apparently, the mayor felt he would take this up with council. But apparently on Saturday or Sunday, there was an unauthorized, whatever the hell that means, rap concert for the protesters in the park, in this green space in downtown Atlanta. And Mayor Kasim Reed got his $2,000 britches in a terrible wad about that and notified the protesters today that they would be cleared out momentarily. Now, what that means, I don't know. But it looks like Atlanta is next for a serious police push. And the call went out this afternoon for more people to show up in downtown Atlanta, which apparently more people have. You have to understand about Atlanta, it is a very, very, the media here is so conservative. There's very little alternative media in Atlanta that is politically active. There are a couple. I'm not saying nobody. There are a couple alternative media outlets in the city, but mainstream media, corporate-owned media in the city, they are very conservative. Their reporters have been covering the Occupy Atlanta. I'm not suggesting that they have not, and the coverage has been slightly slanted against the Occupy Atlanta protesters. Not slanted in a major way, but slightly slanted against them. And that's from somebody who worked in Atlanta media for 25 years. Trust me on this, all right? So the problem with Atlanta media is they will not, there is no media outlet that will issue a call for support. And this program is not carried here in Atlanta, even though I have a 25-year history of being in Atlanta media. There is not a radio station in Atlanta that would dare take my program. I've been down this road so many times. The only way you can get this program in Atlanta is either Sirius or XM or via the internet. But of the 40 or 50 radio stations in Atlanta, not a single one would come near the Malloy program. And, you know, I used to work for the 50,000 watt blowtorch station of the South, WSB, for a number of years. But, oh no, not anymore. God damn, Malloy, you went so far off the reservation. I used to be their token liberal, but they don't even need tokens anymore. So anyway, the bigger story, and I was going to lead tonight's program with this, Oakland occupiers were swept out of two encampments. Apparently, this morning at 5 a.m., over 500 police in riot gear from cities all over Central California attacked the Occupy Oakland encampment at 14th and Broadway. And according to Occupy Oakland, the police attacked the peaceful protest with flash grenades, tear gas, and rubber bullets after moving in with armored vehicles. Jesus Christ, really? Apparently, the media was not allowed in to document this repression, and the police established barricades as far apart as 11th and 17th Streets. Over 70 people were arrested. I believe that number has been revised up to about 85. And the camp gear was destroyed or stolen by the riot police. And the San Jose Mercury News reported it this way. Before dawn Tuesday, at least 200 police, many riot gear, tore down the Occupy Oakland encampment in front of City Hall and arrested dozens of people. Police said the protest was relatively peaceful, with many of the campers leaving on their own. Oh, yeah. Well, of course they would say that. Many were also handcuffed and led away by police from the camp at 14th and Broadway. About 3 hours later, police descended on a second Occupy camp at Snow Park near Lake Merritt with the intent of removing that as well. At the downtown camp, police armed with billy clubs and some with shotguns, overturned tents and the campers' wooden stalls, leaving what looked like a hurricane struck refugee camp in their wake. They ripped up dozens of cardboard signs, overturned a couch, and when it was over, there were scraps of carpet, personal belongings, and trash all over the plaza. Thanks a lot, cops. The Chronicle reports it this way. The police action there began at 4:45 a.m. and involved hundreds of officers from at least 10 law enforcement agencies, including the California Highway Patrol, Alameda County Sheriff's Office, and various East Bay Police Departments. Squads of officers had assembled at the Oakland Coliseum before traveling in convoys downtown. Jesus Christ. Officers in riot helmets began arriving in force and formed a line in the street adjacent to the plaza, while motorcycle officers shut down the street. Some protesters began shouting, "Cops, go home!" About an hour ago, Occupy Boston was scheduled to march in solidarity with their comrades in Oakland. That was about 4 hours ago. I guess in California time, it'd be about an hour ago. Before the raid, the Oakland occupiers made a video explaining the response to the city's demands and threats of eviction. So it's I see this as a serious threat. In other words, the Occupy movement now is getting to the point of critical mass where the pig bastards, the cockroaches like Limbaugh and Beck and O'Reilly and the rest of these scum, these filthy scum who sit on top of the media pyramid in this country, are now making noises about the occupiers. And they're doing it in the usual way. Andrew Breitbart, this rancid son of a bitch. Boy, I'll tell you, one of these days, Andrew Breitbart and Limbaugh, what they're doing is targeting journalists. They go after old targets like NPR and the New York Times by raising questions about objectivity, while at the same time, according to Politico, at the same time undermining the grassroots claims of the new protest movement by suggesting that the Occupy movement has professional help, or at least professional cheerleaders. This from these right-wing, rancid Nazi sons of bitches whose Tea Party movement was funded and continues to be funded with God knows how much money from these filthy Nazi Koch brothers. Here we go.
Starts right now. Here's Mike Malone.
Twenty-one past the hour. So the new target of these right-wing media scum, you know who I'm talking about, are the mainstream reporters and newspapers. According to Politico, both the New York Times and NPR have had to distance themselves from freelancers accused of getting too close to the protests. Oh, God forbid that should happen. Well, MSNBC's Dylan Radigan has come under scrutiny for leaked emails purportedly showing that he had helped the protesters shape their message. Oh, no. Oh, my God. Did he really do that? You rancid right-wing sons of bitches. Oh, boy, the day is coming. Man, it's coming fast, you know. Politico says behind much of the criticism has been Andrew Breitbart, whose sites have published both the leaked emails and Monday's video of a New York Times freelancer speaking about the protests on a panel. Oh, my God! Oh, no. Oh, Andrew, save us. Save us, Breitbart. Oh, my God. She was on a panel? And the pig man himself, this bloated piece of human waste, Rush Limbaugh, last week held up the leaked emails of Radigan and Rolling Stone's Matt Taibbi as evidence that Occupy Wall Street is, quote, a construct of the media Democrat industrial complex. That's what he said. The media Democrat industrial complex. Oh, Limbaugh, for God's sake, please choke on your throat fat and just get the hell off the planet, will you? You disgusting, contemptible subhuman. Oh, my God. Construct of the media, Democrat, industrial, please, Rush, do us a favor. Eat another ham sandwich. Load on the mayonnaise. Eat some French fries. Come on, Rush, you're getting skinny. Oh, my God. Well, this is what proof positive that the right wing in this country is getting scared. In the case of Radigan and Matt Taibbi, as Politico points out, they're both outspoken liberals. So how do you pin down what they're doing as a matter of journalistic ethic, or, you know, a violation of journalistic ethics? They make no bones about their position. Well, and Limbaugh does, and Breitbart and the rest of these pigs, these scum-sucking America haters. Ah! Taibbi's leaked email shows, in essence, a boiled-down version of his article. that he wrote for Rolling Stone. My advice to the Wall Street protesters. It was a goddamn article in Rolling Stone. Ooh, Breitbart. Woo! You really pulled a hot one there, didn't you? Oh, look, it's an article. MSNBC has embraced Occupy Wall Street in a way that echoes the way Fox News embraced the tea bag freaks. But you got to remember that MSNBC suspended Keith Olbermann, and Olbermann finally woke up and smelled the coffee and realized who he was working for and got the hell out of there for Olbermann's equally unshocking donations to Democratic candidates. Because of NBC News' one-size-fits-all ethics policy, NBC ethical? NBC has ethics? Are you kidding me? Are you serious? With the country in the economy, the globe in crisis, and NBC devotes how many precious minutes of their 22-minute nightly newscast to Michael Jackson's trial? Ethics? Ethics? Taibbi noted that the criticism of him came only after politicians, including the president and Mitt Romney, began to shift their rhetoric to be more accepting of the Occupy Wall Street protests. Ooh, can't have that. Oh, no. But the problem is here, the reality is that the majority of Americans, where does this lead the Republican Party? The majority of Americans support the ideas behind Occupy Wall Street or Occupy wherever. Let me tell you, it's the top 1% is going to be run out of town. There is no question about it. It's just a matter of when, not if. It's a matter of when, not if. And as Taibbi wrote, the reality, of course, is that people like Rush and Romney and Obama are all becoming cognizant of the deep frustrations that exist across the political spectrum. And they, Rush, Romney, Obama, et al., are growing desperate to prevent the powder keg from blowing completely. Hence the intense effort to describe Occupy Wall Street as a top-down manipulation. Of course, the notion that this is all a media fabrication is beyond ludicrous. Cause they take their orders from the chairman of the board. IMF, WTO. I hear these words just every place I go. Who are these people? Who elected them? And how do I replace them with some of my friends? Can't you hear?
Are you ready for Radical Talk Radio? It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Phones are open if you want to join in. 877-996-2556. Jeff is in Maricopa, Arizona. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. Hey, I'm just curious. You know that article in Salon Magazine appeared back in December last year? About conservatives have large,
yes,
larger amygdalas,
right,
which controls the fear of the brain.
Right, I remember that, yeah.
I'm just curious, okay, is it the fear that causes the amygdala to grow, or is it the enlarged amygdala that causes the fear?
That's a good question. I don't have a clue. I would guess, biology is Kathy's forte, not mine, and she just told me through the glass here she didn't have a clue. I would assume that certain chemicals are released as a result of fear that may stimulate the growth of an amygdala. That's the one way to look at it. The other way would be that, that's your question, though. Which is which? People born with larger amygdalas are just more prone to fear. I don't know. But I don't have any doubt that it's a biologic truth.
Oh, I agree. I'm curious also, does the amygdala grow larger when you get older?
I would think that most glands start to shrink, don't they? The older you get, not the prostate.
Why are all these old people in Arizona so damned afraid?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just they're fearing the wrong thing. First of all, everybody in Arizona has a gun, I would imagine. But I think they're fearing. I think these
darn straight we do.
Right. I think old folks maybe are fearing the wrong booger man. A lot of older people I've noticed for some reason watch Fox News and or the news channel, the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization, and if you watch that long enough, your brain starts to, I don't know, change. You become eaten up with fear and ignorance. I don't know. I wish I did, Jeff. It's a good question, but I cannot think of an answer.
I'm just trying to figure it out because, you know, I've been living in Arizona now for 12 years, and I've never seen so many people just paralyzed by fear.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, they're afraid of everything. I mean, they're afraid of people of color. They're afraid of, scorpions. You know, forget it. They're afraid to make a left-hand turn on a green light.
Oh, that. Oh, yeah.
unless they have an arrow. You know, I was just going, ah!
Yeah, their cousins live here. Trust me. I've been riding my horn lately. That drives me crazy. Everybody, you're right. Everybody is terrified to do anything where they raise their head above this herd of sheep. It's just flock. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable, Jeff. I don't know, man. If I come up with an answer, I will put it on the air, okay, about the amygdala.
Please do.
Maybe somebody will send me an email about that. Thanks, Jeff.
Got it. Thanks.
All right. Take it easy. That's a good question. You know, which is the cause? Which is the effect? Does anybody know? You don't know that, huh, Kathy? You no information left in the
No, like I said, you went to the well once too often on that one. I don't know if your amygdala gets bigger or smaller. I would just be of a
Well, no, which is the cause and which is the effect? Is the amygdala cause fear or does fear cause the amygdala to
Well, it could be both.
Oh, it could?
It could go both ways. I mean, it could be like, you know, Marcus Bachman.
Yeah, like Marcus Bachman, I think I understand that. All right, from Sally. She writes, Mike, we've been demonstrating in Santa Fe for over a month, and campers have moved from the Bank of America site, 25 tents in all, to the rail yard. It has been low-key so far. Now lines are being drawn, and the demonstrators have joined with the homeless people who are cleaning and keeping the park tidy and safe. At the General Assembly last night, 100 people joined quietly together in a most organized presentation. To see direct democracy in action is a blessing and a joy. The entire crowd used brilliant hand signals in silence to express their opinions during the agenda. 6 proposals were passed in 2 hours, and working groups organized and took on responsibilities. Very organic democracy. The Marines are taking messages from all Occupy sites through this email address, OccupyMarines@gmail.com. OccupyMarines@gmail.com. The Marines are keeping track of violence and abuse of power and the need for their assistance. If you know of any group needing help, have them notify the Marines at the email above. Well, that's interesting. OccupyMarines@gmail.com. And then she signs her email, Lit Sally. Well, that's cool. Thank you, Sally. Occupy Santa Fe. Paul is in Canton, Georgia. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Okay.
Good.
3 quick things for you. One, did you appreciate the fact that the AJC censored the Sarah Palin Doonesbury cartoon? because she didn't have a chance to respond. Did you notice that a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I heard about it. I have to tell you, for different reasons entirely, we canceled our AJC subscription. It just wasn't doing anything. It was all Associated Press copy. Right. The editorial page had gone, with the exception of Jay Bookman, it's gone totally right wing. And we just canceled it. So no, I missed the comic section. Times doesn't have one, but I miss it. But I'd heard that story. Yeah.
Yeah, I checked them out online just so they wouldn't keep me from seeing it.
Yeah.
I don't have the AJC either. But,
right.
The main reason I called was when I noticed that the Iran story is slowly disappearing, because I think it was, in my opinion, was a joint U.S.-Israeli military plan, kind of like the Northwoods thing to try to get us in a mood to attack Iran without actually having them do anything this time.
Oh, the used car salesman who was setting up
Yeah.
They tried
the nuclear weapon thing, and that didn't work, so now they're trying the assassination thing, and a couple months from now they'll try something else.
Right. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised.
And there was a documentary I watched, I don't know if you and Kathy have seen, called Blue Gold.
Companies trying to
privatize water, and their big thing is they want to lower pollution requirements so they can pollute the water and then build plants and desalinization plants so then they can clean the water, because as it goes through their plant, now they own it and they can sell it to you then. And they bought up the rights to water in a majority of the American cities, like Atlanta, Buffalo, where I'm from originally. You name the city, they bought the rights, and that's why water prices are slowly but surely going up. And there was this move that they're pumping water from Canada into the United States, and the Canadian government is so afraid of the American government that they won't do anything to stop it because they're afraid of the repercussions.
Well, I was not aware that water systems, I mean, I know they've been privatized. I think they've been here, in, well, not here. I don't live in Atlanta. But I live very close to it, like you do. But the Atlanta water system, the whole metro area, whether it's DeKalb County water system, Cobb County water system, Atlanta City of, they're all going berserk over the increase in prices that have no rational explanation.
Exactly, and the prices didn't have this problem when they were publicly run, but as soon as they privatize it,
right,
they just kill the service and then raise the prices. If you get a chance to watch it, it's very informative.
What's the name again?
It's called Blue Gold.
Blue Gold.
Correct. And
it's online?
I watched it on Netflix. My son has Netflix.
Netflix, okay.
It was available on there.
All right, I just wrote it down, Blue Gold.
McDowell does the narration for
it. Oh, okay. I'll try to get to that, Paul.
Yeah, it's very good.
All right, man. Thanks for checking in.
Sure. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Take care. Paul in Canton, Georgia. From Prairie 2, regarding the amygdala, be afraid, be very afraid. Constant reinforcement can change the brain, such as rehabilitation after being shot in the head by a right-winger in Arizona. Starting out with extra fear tendencies from your brain structure may create more fear if the environmental factors support it. If, such as watching Fox News or reading Prairie 2, long-term studies will be required. Yeah, well, reading P2 or Prairie 2, yeah, that's certainly given me a new take on the whole fear thing, right? Pat Robertson apparently has been taken over by a demon. Haley Barbour has been apparently taken over by a demon. And Michelle Bachmann apparently has been taken over by a demon. I'll explain to you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Switch.
revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. I'll get to the demon-possessed people in a moment. From the OccupyMarines.org website, Occupy Marines are separated or retired Marines who support Occupy Wall Street and general Occupy movements. We are not on active duty and do not represent the government of the United States of America, the United States Marine Corps, or any of the other armed services. We are acting and organizing as former Marines, private citizens, and patriots of the United States of America. Occupy Marines ask our currently serving brothers and sisters to follow appropriate regulations with regard to participating in movements such as Occupy Wall Street. And there's there's a little bit more there, but this this is at their website. We were asked today by a naysayer to explain what Occupy Marines are doing for Occupy Wall Street. We replied with a more accurate question to ask is what Occupy Marines are not doing. Occupy Marines are not sitting on our asses watching the 1% rip out the heart of America. America dialed 911 and we stood up. We answered America's call. We've watched since September 17th this wondrous event unfold. We watched as this small demonstration took hold of the world and we quickly understood that they are not going away. So we listened more. We listened to the demonstrators. We listened to the public respond and observed how quickly divided Americans were becoming. How these knucklehead naysayers day after day discredit what Occupy Wall Street is doing. Well, naysayers, Occupy Marines have a message for you. Continue sitting on your asses while the 1% laugh at you, lie to you, tell you to shut up, or tell you to shut your soup coolers and mind your own business. Go ahead and quibble, naysayers, while Marines once again stand up for the future of America. And when the day comes, when Occupy Wall Street hits history books across the world and we alongside them, that day when someone asks you if you were there, naysayers, you are going to say, no, I was too scared. I did not have the balls to fight for my country. I did not have the courage to confront the problems eroding America. But I did feel confident enough to attack those brave souls that did stand up for America. I did fight to disregard their message. Tell them that when asked, naysayers, afterwards, return to your life, remembering that you are insignificant to history. Do not worry, naysayers. The Marines have your back. Again, we support you, America. Keep pushing forward. Signed, Occupy Marines. Thanks for sending that, Reg. So if you if you are curious, William in Roanoke Rapids, North Carolina. Hello, William.
Oh, hi, Mike. Honor and a pleasure. Hey, I was just calling here real quick. I guess first off, I would say I rode through downtown Durham, North Carolina today, and I did see some Occupy Durham folks out. So if there's
really
anything, I would like to say hey to those folks. I was working myself, so I couldn't stop. But I just wanted to say, you know, I've been listening, I'm a podcast subscriber, and, the last few days, I know you've gotten a few calls about people kind of telling protesters and occupiers to keep their eyes open for potential threats.
Right.
And I just wanted to see if you had, were aware of or had heard about an incident that happened in Greensboro, North Carolina, I think about 20 years ago, where a group of, neo-Nazi.
Oh, yeah. They attack a group of communists and like five people wound up dead.
That's right. And they were all the leftists got shot and killed because the police kind of conveniently weren't available to protect them. So
right.
It really can happen, and it has happened.
Yeah, and I've seen that film. I don't think it was a video. I think it was an actual film, and it's pretty intense. These were, I think there was, what, 8 or 10 CPUSA demonstrators. I forget. They were demonstrating for civil rights or equal rights or something, and a couple of cars pull up, and as you point out, these neo-Nazis, these skinheads jump out, and they're all armed. And what appears to be a gun battle starts. I think one of the CPUSA people had a handgun, but you can watch people fall as they're shot. I'm sure it's out on YouTube someplace. So you're absolutely right. The propensity towards violence is certainly, ownership is on the right wing. It truly is. I mean, a lot of people say, well, what about all the violence in the 60s? What about attempting to blow up buildings? I think there was one, nutcase on the left who attempted to blow up a lab at a school. Where was it? In Wisconsin? And a night watchman was killed. Any other attempt that they made, they usually blew themselves up. But the right wing has almost an exclusive franchise on violence and killing in this country. Always have, always will.
Right. And you know, I guess one last point. You know, the right wing and their media supporters, what do they? They always accuse the other side of exactly what they are. Always, right?
Right.
And so you can see it when they're as you were talking about earlier, these folks saying that the Occupy movement is a creation of the what did you say? Media, Democrat, industrial complex.
Yeah, Limbaugh.
You know,
Limbaugh. Yeah, Limbaugh said the media, Democrat, industrial complex. You know, he just patched together several words that he's heard liberals say, and he comes up with that.
And it's because he knows absolutely well that that's exactly what Tea Party was. So
sure.
What do they do? They always accuse the other side of what they are. Anyway, that's
don't they? They always do.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, William. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Durham, North Carolina. Boy, I spent a lot of time in Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill, Golden Triangle. All right, we're going to take a break and come back. Phone lines are open if you want to chat. 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour, trying to get updates on what's going on in Oakland here. I have an email that's over an hour old about police donning gas masks, firing tear gas into the protests. We'll try to keep you posted on this. Regarding that event in Greensboro, North Carolina, where the people were killed, Ron Arelli writes, Mike, it was a death to the Klan rally. P.S. No one was sent to jail. Pat Robertson, got to digress here for a moment, then we'll get back to your calls. Pat Robertson, on his program, the 700 Club, I think today, commented on the views of the Republican Party, calling those views extreme. Oh, Jesus, God. Pat Robertson, this is the guy who a couple of weeks ago said, if your spouse develops that disease where you can't remember how to say Alzheimer's, if your spouse develops that, you can leave him or her and go, mess around with somebody else. Anyway, Robertson quoted, of all people, Lyndon Johnson, quote, don't these people realize that if they push me over to an extreme position, I'll lose the election? Robertson said that if candidates venture into heavily radical territory, as they all are, they're all goddamn crazy, it could cost Republicans a general election. Yeah, in other words, put a lid on it. Go ahead and continue to believe that. Just don't let America know. Robertson said, these people in the Republican primary have got to lay off this stuff. If they want to lose, this is a game for losers. Oh, God. I wonder which one he means. Is it Rick Perry or Michelle Bachman or Romney or Hummin' Cain or Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum? Which one are you talking about there? So apparently, Pat Robertson, I don't know. He didn't lock his door properly at night or didn't say his prayers right. Now a demon has moved in to his body. Kevin is out. Kevin in where? Where are you, Kevin? CS. Do you mean SC? Kevin in CS writes, I think you have that a bit wrong. Perhaps it was or is the demon being taken over by Pat Robertson. Just a thought and a warning to all the demons out there. Ooh, yeah, well, that could be, too. Haley Barbour apparently is demon-possessed. Among the more established and seasoned field of Republican operatives, there's a bit of concern, you see, that these sideshow issues and the flamboyance, I'm sure by that he's referring to Herman Cain, could muddy a relatively generous 2012 electoral landscape for the Republicans. Haley Barbour said this morning, he warned Rick Perry and others to cut out the birther talk, right? Barbour said after an appearance with the American Action Forum at the National Press Club, he said, look, if this election is about Barack Obama's policies and the results of those policies, Barack Obama's going to lose. Any other issue that gets injected into the campaign is not good for the Republicans. Republicans should want this election to be what American presidential elections have always been about, a referendum on the incumbent's record. Barack Obama cannot win a second term running on his record. Zero chance. So anybody who talks about anything else is off subject. Now, Barbour claimed he had not seen or heard Perry's comments. When informed that the Republican presidential candidate, that would be Perry, was echoing Donald Trump's questions about Obama's birthplace and his eligibility for the presidency, Haley Barbour continued to plead ignorance. Barbour said, he says Trump says it's a fraud. Well, I don't know what Trump said. And Haley Barbour also said, stakes of this election are so high that I think every voter, precinct leader, county chairman, donor, whatever Republican you're talking about wants to be sure we nominate the candidate that has the best chance to beat Obama. Well, according to Haley Barbour, that would be Herman Cain. Remember a week or so ago, he said, well, if election was held today and if it was Herman Cain and Barack Obama, now that would upset me a bit, of course, because, I'm white. Used to be part of the White Citizens Council down here. But if it were them two boys, now I don't mean anything calling them boys, because they are boys to me, I'm from Mississippi, mofo. What do you think? But if them two boys were run today, well, I think old Herman Cain would win. He'd win the South. Jesus God. I don't know. Sometimes, truly, really, honestly, living in the South is like living in an open-air zoo. It just natural habitat zoo. I mean, there are folks down here that are just unbelievable. That's what makes it so damned entertaining. Every time we go up to the North Georgia Mountains, we get in disguise and go. But It's just astonishing. I mean, it's beautiful country, and there are a lot of really nice people. There really are. But Mayan, you know, you can run into some of them. Woo! It's just astonishing. Michelle Bachmann is demon-possessed, apparently. She said she opposed the United Nations taking away gun rights at a recent Iowa campaign stop, even though such a thing remains almost impossible. She said, "I don't believe in the UN taking that right away from us as well. There are international treaties that want to do that." As she said that in response to a question on the Second Amendment after affirming her support for gun rights, this is according to LA Times. And Senator Rand Paul, I mean, what are these people, what do they have? Amygdala, my ass, their heads are packed full of sawdust. Rand Paul sent out an urgent message to his supporters in early October warning them that the UN is going to take away their Second Amendment rights. Woohoo! Oh, my God. The UN will consider the Arms Trade Treaty next summer, regulating international arms sales, you dumb bastards. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said that she would support the negotiations on the condition that the talks operate on consensus, giving any country veto power. The U.S. also insisted on adding language that gives states the exclusive right to regulate arms trade within their own borders. By states, you right-wingers, they mean countries, you know. Any treaty also would need 67 votes in the U.S. Senate to be ratified. Oh, Lord, they're going to take away our guns. Now the U.N. is coming. The U.N. is coming. Watch out, watch out. Here he comes, here he comes. Last month, Bachmann warned that Hezbollah was building missile sites in Cuba. Remember that? Hezbollah. They're building missile sites in Cuba. And she also claimed that the HPV vaccine caused mental retardation. Woo-hoo! Oh, my God. Bachmann, I don't know why I even talk about her, because she's a cartoon character. That's why. That's the only reason. She's just a cartoon character. All right. Quick break. We'll come back and take your phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. To the local news covering the fascist assault on these citizens. I believe he's talking about Oakland. I bounce back and forth between the local channels. On Channel 7, a Disney channel, a mousy blonde was covering the SS Roundup. What bothered me was her commentary rather than her objective reporting. I got so mad I called the station at 5:30 in the morning and happened to get someone in the news department. I told the person who answered, quote, "I can't believe the biased reporting. I told them I won't ever watch their news ever again." Complete quiet on the other end and then a hang up. I've written you before about my son Chris, who is at the Occupy Wall Street When I told him what had happened, he quoted Gandhi, "First they ignore you, then they mock you, then they fight you, and then you win." I was so happy to hear there are hundreds in the Oakland streets this evening. They got the guns, but we got the numbers. One. Sarah is in L.A. listening on online. Hello, Sarah.
Sarah?
Is this not Sarah?
Cheryl.
Huh?
Cheryl. Yes.
Oh, hey, Cheryl. I'm sorry.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm okay, Cheryl. How are you?
Pretty good. It was funny that you brought up about Pat Robertson and Haley Barbour. I was just asking, now that Wall Street is going to back up Mitt Romney, you think he'll be the next president?
Mitt Romney?
Because they both were backed up by Wall Street, him and Obama.
I think he'll be, I think he's going to be the Republican nominee. But I, you know, without a challenge from the left, I don't think Obama's going to be defeated. I really don't. I mean,
he's going to be a little bit worse than Obama to me, even though I'm kind of disappointed with Obama. But
well, yeah, me too. But Romney, there's going to be a lot of money on Romney because I think the Wall Street crowd. The capitalist crowd, they understand that the other seven Republican nominees are a bunch of damn clowns. Romney, Romney's one of them. Herman Cain, who claims to be a former executive, he's not one of them. Rick Perry, damn sure is not. Michelle Bachmann never could be. Santorum is just a freak. Who they left with? Newt Gingrich is so 1990s. I mean, he reminds me of an old pair of shoes sitting in the back of my closet. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
Who do they have? They have Romney, and Romney would be very, very controllable. He's gotten the message that he can't do that moderate Republican crap anymore like he did in Massachusetts. So I think Romney, there's no question in my mind that Romney's going to be the nominee, and there's also no question in my mind that Obama will beat him if it's just those two.
Yeah. I also had a question. Did you receive my email? I was the one on dialysis. I talked to you 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
I sent it Saturday and about another one 2 weeks before that, but I don't know if you got it because my email gets funny.
I
was just going to send it by regular mail.
Well, I'm sure I did, Cheryl. Just that I get
so popular. You get more than
I do get a lot of emails, and so, you know, Kathy's always getting on me because she'll look at my email box. There'll be 800 emails in there. She's like, "When are you going to clear this out?" And so if you wrote to me and asked me something, I didn't respond. I do apologize.
Oh, that's okay.
All right.
Okay, because I didn't know if it was working or not, and I haven't heard you say it on the air, so I didn't know if you got it or or you did, and you probably overlooked it or something.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. But I remember reading something, and I guess it was from you, about getting dialysis, and I forget what you wrote to me about it, but I do remember getting that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So don't hate me because I didn't respond.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks,
all right,
Mike.
Cheryl, thank you. I appreciate you checking in as always. Thanks a lot, Cheryl. I do that a lot. It's just sometimes it does get, you know, I talk about having 34 listeners. Well, they must get all their relatives to write me or something because I know we don't have more than, you know, just a handful of listeners, but I'll be damned if we don't get just enormous amount of email. I have no idea. I guess the 34 listeners, just for the sheer fun of it, notify everybody in there. All their acquaintances say, send Malloy an email. Fill up his email box. All right, we have one open line if you want to get in here. We're going to take your calls when we come back after this next break. The number is 877-996-2556, 877-996-2556. There's a couple more things I'd like to get to tonight if we have the time, plus your phone calls. So, in Ohio, an overwhelming majority of Ohio voters favor repealing the new anti-union law backed by this punk-ass governor, John Kasich. Opposition to what Kasich's trying to do has increased sharply in the past month. That's according to a new Quinnipiac University poll. Almost 60% of voters said they support the repeal of what is known as SB 5. So look for John Kasich to be a one-term governor. But I'll tell you what, you know, to the people of Ohio who voted this rat bastard in, what did you expect? I mean, what did you expect? These Republican governors, every single one of them, is out to cut your throat, just to cut your throat and giggle while you bleed. Wake up, y'all.
I do not like them in my nation. It's more Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. Back to your calls here. Marissa is in Covington, Connecticut. Hello, Marissa.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, good. Thank you. First of all, I want to announce everybody to get down to New York, Occupy Wall Street, this Saturday at 1 o'clock for Occupy Against Big Food, the Big Food Movement. So every dietitian, nutritionist in the tri-state area needs to get down to... Sorry, my kids are excited. I'm on the radio. They're coming down. They should be in bed.
No, that's great. That's a good idea.
I'm trying to talk. I'm trying to have them go back up. Thank you. Anyway, so I'm in Connecticut, but the reason I'm calling is I don't know if you're aware that Michael Moore was on Piers Morgan tonight at 9 a.m.
Uh-huh.
9 p.m. and I thought this was to be good. having Michael Moore live with Piers Morgan, I thought this would be an interesting exchange, and it really was a very interesting exchange. It really was symbolic of this whole discussion surrounding the Occupy movement. Because as Michael Moore was speaking truth to power, they kept showing these Twitters. I guess you can Twitter in, you know, your comments or questions to Michael.
Right.
Michael Moore. And it was all about, talking bad about the banks. Blaming the banks for bringing on this whole big problem that we have today is like blaming the sun for skin cancer.
Oh,
my God.
CNN has become Fox 2. And it's really kind of a joke. Piers, what's his last name? Morgan?
Piers Morgan. Yeah, I mean, this guy, he's a British guy from Britain's Got Talent. Now he does America's Got Talent, and now he's on CNN.
Right.
It's a very interesting.
Well, he comes across to me as just kind of a twit, but a right-wing twit. I don't see anything. I don't watch his show, obviously, because I'm on the air when he is, but. I know that from little clips that I've seen, he seems to be as much of a right winger as anybody on the Rupert Murdoch terror network. So, CNN.
Well, they kept trying to corner him and saying, "No, you're one of the 1%. You know, you're making all this money and yada yada yada." And then, of course, in the end of the show, with some crazy guy from South Carolina saying, "You know, Bush was the best president we ever had. You know, you need to take yourself out of California." And yeah, okay, Michael, okay. My son's yelling at me. Nothing that was not expected, but just seeing it actually play out. And, of course, they kept showing pictures of the Oakland, you know, like the big stand-up against the police,
right.
And it's like, you know, they did brief shots in New York where people just standing around peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
It was nothing that I wasn't expecting, but it just when I actually see it actually happening, you know, you're just like, you just can't not shake your head, you know?
Yeah.
So thank you for what you do. And like I said, every dietitian in the tri-state area needs to be in New York City at 1 o'clock, Zuccotti Park, this Saturday.
And
Occupy Against the Big Food, because to say the corporations have not changed the face of our American food supply and change the face of American, the public health crisis that we have. It definitely has a big hand that we need to stand up against. So.
That's very true. That's an honorable event on Saturday. Thanks for sharing it with us, Marissa.
All right, thank you. Take care.
Take care. You too. Okay, this Saturday, you heard Marissa, this Saturday, 1 p.m., Occupy Wall Street, Zuccotti Park, be there. Yeah, the big food industrial complex, I mean, it's one more example of the corruption, the capitalist corruption. I mean, it really is. These are not small business people who have corrupted the food supply. These are not entrepreneurs. These are not the Jeffersonian-style farmers and small businesses. In other words, the anti-capitalists. There's nothing capitalist about small business. There's nothing predatory about a family farm. But the big factory farms, the big food industrial complex, it's like the military industrial complex. It's like the pharmaceutical industrial complex. These are massive capitalist organizations. The food end of it is not the least bit interested in providing nutrition. The pharmaceutical industrial complex is not the least bit interested in providing health. The military industrial complex is not the least bit interested in providing security to the United States. Every single one of these massive blank industrial complexes are capitalist organizations that are out there for one reason only, to rip, gouge, and steal as much as they possibly can from the American consumer, the American worker, the American citizen, the American system. You filthy bastards. Boy, I'll tell you, now Marissa's kids are listening, and okay, I'm sorry, Marissa. Sorry to use the B word. Somebody disagree with me. Nah, that's ridiculous. Who can disagree, right? Grant is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hello, Grant.
Hey, man.
Hey.
I want to say that me and you go way back. I can remember when you were on a big old radio station out of Atlanta.
Oh, yeah.
And back in 1993, when I came home from the first Gulf War and became aware of the fact that talk radio even existed,
uh-huh.
I can remember when you were on at night. I used to run from Oklahoma to Jacksonville and back all the time.
Uh-huh.
That's how I got back into the swing of things. And I'm not a creep, but I followed your career. And I just got back into a truck Friday that has XM radio in it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm glad that you're still on the air. You know, you're one of two old school guys, but you're the only one left. You know, the other one's Jay Marvin.
You're right.
And, you know, he's gone.
Right.
And the reason I called was, I get to laughing all the time when I hear you making fun of the Tea Party guys, because I know two Tea Party guys back home that
mm-hmm.
they go to those rallies and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, their own kids had kids out of wedlock, and they're raising their kids on welfare, Medicaid, and all that kind of stuff. And I always get a real kick out of those guys because they say stupid things like, you know, Obama, first it was Clinton, and now it's Obama, you know, is going to take your guns
right.
from you. And I said to one of them one time, I said, guns? What do you do running around with a gun? You're a convicted felon. You know, and they're the ones that are always saying the stupid cliches about, you know, nuke them all, let God sort them out.
Right.
And I'd be the one that was at the family, you know, at the Thanksgiving dinner and said, I was in the Army twice. And I'd say, well, you can always tell the guys have never been shot at.
Right. They're the ones, ones running around talking about, nuke them all, sure. How do you have a conversation, Grant? I mean, are these friends, these teabaggers, or just people you know, or what?
They're in my wife's family. I don't.
Oh, I
can't
see.
Really avoid them too much. I only have to see them two or three times a year because with my job, I don't have to be around people that much. You
what,
know, that,
what,
that
what
don't appeal to me.
What about your wife? How does she deal with them? Or is she, what's your wife's politics?
Well, she's pretty cool with Democratic. She votes Democratic and everything.
Oh,
and,
uh-huh.
You know, me and her are on the same page. I've been married 30 years this year.
Wow.
And
congratulations.
I don't think I could have made it that long. Yeah, well, if I was at home, we probably would have been married about 2 weeks. But, you know, but no, being serious, I'm just saying that, you know, if we didn't get along on core values, you know, we couldn't have made it either.
Yeah.
You know, on what's important and what's not important.
Right.
And, you know, we know which side of the bread are, you know, is buttered for us and, mm-hmm. and who's going to give me a job and all that kind of stuff. We
sure.
know what's going on.
Well,
so,
good. You,
I really appreciate that you're out there.
Well, thanks, Grant. Yeah, if you go back to the J. Marvin days, you go back a long way, man.
Well, I do. You know, you were on first, and then I could switch over and get him out of
right.
Chicago.
Out of Chicago, right, yeah. And then we both
yeah.
worked. We both worked at the same station in Chicago for about
you
a
sure
year.
Did.
Yeah, and then of course, they WLS decided to fire me because I was too liberal for Chicago.
Well, man, you never have been able to say the right thing.
No, I haven't. I haven't. That's why we have our own little company now, and thank God for Sirius and XM. They get us out all over the country, and then we have, 30, 40 stations that carry us. But, I feel like, Charlton Heston, when are you going to stop broadcasting, Mike Malloy? Well, when they pry the microphone from my cold, dead hands!
Well, that's right. You know, of course, J. Marvin isn't deceased, but you know that is what happened to him. You know, he had such health problems.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he was getting sick in Chicago, and then when he moved to Denver, he was on the air out there, and then got real sick out here. But he's recovering now. He just can't do the strain. That, Marvin, is when you say old school, I know what you mean. We're the type to get very riled up, get very pissed off, get very vocal.
But you were one of the first, too.
Well, that's true. That is true.
Do you remember when he used to scream, "You stupid brain stem"?
Yeah, I remember. I do remember, yeah. All right, hey, listen, Grant, stay in touch, all right, man?
Yeah, I will. Thanks, sir.
All right, thank you, Grant. Take care. We'll be back. I'd really like to help you out. That's just the way it goes. It's so sad and that's too bad. Everybody knows. You can't say that on the radio.
This angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, Brian is in Beverly Hills, California. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Viva Malloy.
Yeah, right.
Hey, listen, I wanted to mention something. A friend of mine posted on my Facebook page a couple of days ago this video. It's called Police Brutality Handled the Way It Should Be.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at a sporting event. It looks like it's, I don't know where, it's not even in this country. But this guy comes out onto the field with a sign, and he's just kind of running around being silly. And the police go after him, and it's like on a soccer field.
Right.
And the police, they tackle this guy in the middle of the field. They pin him down. There's like four or five cops, you know. And they start beating on this guy. And the crowd just doesn't want to take that, and so the crowd comes down onto the field and just starts beating the crap out of these cops.
Oh my God!
And it's just, you know, it's kind of, in a way, it's a little bit violent. It's not terrible, but I think it's relevant in that there's so many more people than there are police, you know.
Right.
And the police, if, you know, they just have to learn to restrain themselves. Otherwise, they're not going to win.
Well, you know, especially where it concerns civil disobedience, which involves, if it involves law breaking at all, the laws being broken are laws against trespass.
Sure.
And, you know, this thing is going on in Oakland right now. I was looking at some live stream video from Oakland, and I see what appears to be scores, if not hundreds, of police. And I'm thinking, you know, Oakland, California has one of the highest murder rates in the United States, certainly in California. And yet there are enough cops to, and I realize they're not just from Oakland. They're from all over Central California, but there are enough cops to go after and harass people who are practicing civil disobedience, if they're practicing any law breaking at all, it would be civil disobedience. It would be misdemeanor laws. And you look at the video and you see these cops who are dressed like they're about to go into combat in the 22nd century up against space aliens who have landed somewhere in the country of Georgia. I mean, it's just the weirdest damn thing I've ever seen. I mean, it's one thing to use force, I guess, when you're dealing with the potential for a riot, but to dress up like you're going up against equally armed and resistant people who are just out there exercising their constitutional rights. What a joke that's become. Constitutional rights, my ass. I mean, this, and it's going to happen. I just feel it's going to happen. One of these cops is going to either using live ammunition or using some kind of anti-riot weaponry is going to cause the death of one of these protesters. And when that happens, then it's game on. And I don't say that as if, you know, as though someone's death is a game. I'm just saying at that point, it's going to be very difficult for the Occupy movement to continue to convince demonstrators. I'm not saying it's impossible. It's going to be very difficult to continue to convince them that this is to remain nonviolent.
Exactly.
That's what literally worries me.
Well, that's why, and exactly my point is this video, which is kind of, you know, it's kind of removed in a way, but it's just the fact that, you know, these cops, they show their force, and, you know, then suddenly they look around and realize they're outnumbered and they are the biggest cowards. They run away with their tails between their legs.
Yeah.
And that's probably what will happen in this case as well if violence does break out.
Let's hope it doesn't happen. Brian, thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. You know, dissent is patriotic. Resistance is patriotic. Refusing to continue this horrific process of capitalist destruction is patriotic. And I've said this when the Occupy movement began, and it became apparent that there was a tremendous amount of youth energy that was propelling this. Yeah, there are a lot of middle-aged people, a lot of older people, but it is young people who are providing that desperately needed energy. Middle-aged, older people can provide the bodies, can provide numerical force, but it's younger people that provide the energy, and it always has been. It always will be. I hope this remains nonviolent. I know people like this rat bastard Glenn Beck and the rest of these swine are just hoping for violence. They're praying to their false gods for violence. Because they're cowards and they want to sit in their offices and watch the bloodshed. I hope that doesn't happen. I truly do. But as the resistance to the resistance continues to build, at some point, there is going to be a clash of ideas. One idea being justice, the other idea being predatory capitalism. All right, when we come back, I'm going to make just one hell of an attempt to tell you about the coming derivatives crisis. And I'm going to rely, of course, on Prairie 2 having warned us about this. And a little bit of Bob Alexander. Stick around. You're going to either love this or realize that I'm in way over my head. We'll be right back. Something called the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan. Yeah, a commission. It was established by Congress to investigate and expose government waste. Government waste. You mean corporate capitalist, national security state, military industrial complex waste. Not government waste. Come on. Government doesn't go spend it. The government gives it to contractors, right? Anyway, after 3 years of work, the commission officially shut down last week, having concluded that the United States, I love these general terms, right? The United States misspent between $31 and $60 billion in contracting for services in Iraq and Afghanistan. Who's the U.S.? Would that be Obama, the Congress, you and me? Who, you know, U.S. misspent up to $60 billion in contracting for services in Iraq and Afghanistan. One of the major contractors there, of course, a couple of them were Blackwater, Halliburton, Kellogg Brown Root. Have familiar sounds, don't they? Okay. Anyway, the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan has decided not to release what it discovered. It will not reveal its volumes of materials to the public for 20 years. Son of a bitch. What the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan, they'll tell you what they discovered. Up to $60 billion stolen, not misspent. Don't give me that crap. Don't give me the euphemisms. $60 billion stolen during wartime. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Come on. Let's not play games here. This is what the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan, this is what they'll reveal. As a conclusion, well, up to $60 billion was, you know, misspent my ass. It was stolen by American companies. Huh? Isn't this great? This is why we sent people over there to die, have half their brains blown away, come back with PTSD, have 4, 5, 6, 7 deployments, children raised without a father or a mother. And now, due to the fact that 5,000 American soldiers, 6,000, 7,000 are dead, all these kids who will be raised permanently without a parent, so that these filthy, blood-sucking, capitalist, war-mongering contractors could steal blind from the American public. Smedley Butler, General, United States Marine Corps, 2-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, said a long time ago, war is a racket. Now, what are we going to do about this? Nothing. Well, in the first place, we don't even know the details and won't know. 20 years from now, how old are you going to be, Truth Seeker? The results of the commission's work will not be available to the public at the National Archives until 2031 because, are you ready? Some of the documents contain, quote, sensitive information, end quote, according to one of the people on the commission. An expert on government secrecy at the Federation of American Scientists told the Wall Street Journal that the 20-year term, quote, seems like a long period of time, particularly for a commission whose sole purpose is to improve accountability and expose waste, end quote. Just a comment to the expert on government secrecy at the Federation of American Scientists. The sole purpose of the commission is not to improve accountability and expose waste. The sole purpose of the commission is to hide what they find. Come on. Come on, Mr. Expert on Government Secrecy. Come on. Come on. Now, this was linked to TV News Lies, and I guess it was Jesse Richard there wrote, here's a comment. The best way for criminals to hide their crimes is by declaring them to be top secret. The JFK files, the 9/11 evidence, fraud, whatever the crime is, the criminals are in a place to set them up and hide the evidence. I saw this and I just thought, now this is published all over the place, Wall Street Journal, other sources. But you can get the first link. Go to tvnewslies.org and it's right there. 20 years. Now, let me ask you something. Supposing you are a family member of a family contributed an American to this capitalist, corporatist horror that was Iraq. And the Commission on Government Waste comes up with this report and says up to $60 billion was stolen, but we're not going to tell you by whom. And you can wait 20 years to find out. If you're a member of a family that provided somebody to go fight and kill and die and get injured and wounded and all the atrocities that occur during war, how do you feel about this? Or are you content to just say, well, okay, you know, it's all right. My husband, son, father, wife, daughter, mother, whoever, lost an arm and half a leg defending freedom. Excuse me, I don't mean to laugh because a lot of people suffer greatly over this kind of garbage. But think about it. And it's not government waste, is it? Of course not. It is fraud committed by the bloodsuckers in this country. And the war contractors, just a tiny little element of bloodsuckers. This is just another element of capitalism. It really is. I don't know why this is hard to understand or to get, that capitalism is a system that sucks and destroys and bloodlets and eviscerates just anything it can get its figurative hands on. Anything and everything. It just utterly and absolutely destroys. It's like a biblical plague of locusts. You know, it swoops in, devours, eats, destroys, and then swoops somewhere else and does the same thing. Why is this so hard for us to get? Why do we continue to insist that capitalism is the only system that works in the United States? Why do the religious freaks, the Christians and the Jews, and to a lesser extent the Muslims, insist that this is the type of economic system that has to be in place? What is it? What do the religious people gain out of this? Where in any of the holy texts, so-called, of all these religions, does it say that capitalism, this exploitative, filthy, murderous system of now, not just economics, but also of government, is the one? What, you know? But I hear the other day the Catholic Church is calling for a different system. What? I could get my mind around that a little bit and go read what they're talking about if first they would fire everybody and start all over again, because one of their organizing principles is child sexual abuse. So until you folks, you boys over there at the church do that, you know, go away with your solutions to other stuff. You know, clean your own house first, right? Right, boys? Okay. Just stop with the abusing, sexually violating little girls and little boys. You know, get the pedophilia under control before you start advising the globe on different economic or governance systems. You think? I think, anyway. But there you have it. The Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan has decided not to reveal its conclusions, its volumes of materials to the public, until the year 2031. And between now and then, there will be legislation passed to make it permanently secret. We'll be back in a moment.
Looking for illegal immigrants. Yeah, we'll check your car. Saying no, honey, I think we were on the same boat back in 1694. And I said, la, 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 shame on you. They'll be dancing. La, 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 I said, shame on you. I said, la, 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 shame on you. Shame on you. La, 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 shame on you.
Flying Monkey Free Zone. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. This is a little difficult topic for me to understand. So I don't know how difficult it'll be for you having it filtered through me. But I got an email from Bob Alexander. Not a moment email, but he's talking about something, or he wrote about something that was in the news the other day, and I think Prairie too had addressed this. The entire current U.S. debt stands at about $15 trillion. Okay. But that raises a problem, or question, I should say. If our debt is $15 trillion, what is this going to do? What is this? Well, we mentioned this the other night. The FDIC has decided to cover losses accumulated by Bank of America on their bets on derivatives. The losses of Bank of America amount to about $75 trillion. And the article, it was out there, covered by all sorts of media outlets, said potential losses on Bank of America's massive $75 trillion book of risky derivative contracts has just been dumped onto the FDIC by the Federal Reserve. And it went on to say that instead of curtailing derivative trading, the major banks have expanded it. See, this is capitalism again. These are what the tricksters at the top of the food chain in capitalism do. They don't give a goddamn. Bank of America, with a massive position of $75 trillion in gross derivatives, $75 trillion in gross derivatives, suddenly has a crisis on its hands. Nervous counterparties are demanding more cash collateral after downgrades of Bank of America's credit rating. The Fed's approval to move derivatives from Bank of America's holding company to the depository unit directly, the FDIC, puts the U.S. taxpayers on the hook. Do you remember voting on this? Do you remember having a say about this? I don't either. The FDIC does not have the resources to absorb potentially huge losses from Bank of America's derivative bets. Furthermore, without massive government guarantees, there would be no buyer for a failed Bank of America, given the open-ended risks involved here. So to prevent complete panic by the public. I didn't know I was on the verge of panic. Were you? To prevent a complete panic by the public from a looming failure of Bank of America, the Fed, the FDIC, and the U.S. Treasury would again have to provide virtually unlimited financial support courtesy of you and me, the U.S. taxpayer. And Bob writes, now, I don't know one zillionth of what Prairie 2 knows, but I do know if you add $75 trillion to $14.7 trillion. Remember, $14.7 trillion is our current U.S. debt. So if you add our debt to the $75 trillion we're now on the hook for, you get $89.7 trillion of debt that U.S. taxpayers are on the hook now to pay back. Except for one little nasty-ass reality, and that is the GDP, the gross domestic product, the value of all goods and services of the entire planet is only $58 trillion. So even if the U.S. government were to seize the wealth of the entire planet, and even if we taxed all the wealth of not only the rich, but the miserably poor as well, we still couldn't pay off the debt that you and I are now on the hook for thanks to Bank of America's gamblers. Huh? How about that? So what's the short-term solution? Leave. What's the long-term solution? Who cares? You've left, haven't you? The citizens of the United States are going to be on the hook to pay back trillions of dollars of debt in easy-to-pay monthly payments forever. There'll never again be any money for schools, for infrastructure, for so-called entitlement programs, for anything, anything, forever. This is where and when, Bob writes, everything changes. And when something as overwhelming as everything changes shows up at your door, it doesn't ask permission or for volunteers. It just changes everything. And you better hope you're wearing seatbelts and clean underwear. Who knows when this hammer will come down? In the words of King Arthur and Monty Python and the Holy Grail, run away! $75 trillion. Now, I have something here I'll try to share with you when we come back. It's a little bit over my head, but I'm going to make the attempt anyway. This is some really, really scary stuff about the same topic. Stick around. Let's see if Uncle Mikey can do this.
If you're not this angry, then you're not paying attention. Back to Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This is from Business and Finance. It is, I'll just get right into it. Most people have no idea that Wall Street has become a gigantic financial casino. The big Wall Street banks are making tens of billions of dollars a year in the derivatives market. And nobody in the financial community wants the party to end. The word derivative sounds complicated and technical, but understanding them is really not that hard. A derivative is essentially a fancy way of saying that a bet has been made. Originally, these bets were designed to hedge risk. But today, the derivatives market has mushroomed into a mountain of speculation unlike anything the world has ever seen before. Estimates of the national or the notional value of the worldwide derivative markets go from $600 trillion all the way up to $1.5 quadrillion. Keep in mind that the GDP of the entire world is only somewhere in the neighborhood of $60 trillion. Now, the danger to the global financial system posed by derivatives is so great that Warren Buffett once called them, quote, financial weapons of mass destruction, end quote. For now, the financial powers that are the financial powers that be are trying to keep the casino rolling. But it is inevitable that at some point this entire mess is going to come crashing down. And when it does, we're going to be facing a derivatives crisis that really could destroy the entire global financial system. Now, let me digress from this for just a moment. When that happens, then I think it would be entirely appropriate to hunt down the people who did it, give them a quick trial, and execute them. And the trial would be optional. Because what we're talking about here is the destruction of the globe, the financial system of the globe. Not that I'm a fan of capitalism or any of this, and the system probably needs to be destroyed. But the result of this destruction will be, obviously, you don't need to be a weatherman to know which way the wind is blowing, the deaths of hundreds of millions of innocent people. Because there'll be no food, there'll be no water, there'll be no energy, there'll be nothing. So, I digress. The article goes on, most people don't talk much about derivatives because they simply don't understand them. Perhaps a couple of definitions would be helpful. The following is how a recent Bloomberg article defined derivatives. Quote, derivatives are financial instruments used to hedge risks or for speculation. They're derived from stocks, bonds, loans, currencies, and commodities, or linked to specific events such as changes in the weather or interest rates, end quote. Now, the key word here is speculation. Today, the folks down on Wall Street are speculating on just about anything that you can imagine. The following is how Investopedia defines derivatives. Quote, a security whose price is dependent upon or derived from one or more underlying assets. The derivative itself is merely a contract between two or more parties. Its value is determined by fluctuations in the underlying asset. The most common underlying assets include stocks, bonds, commodities, currencies, interest rates, and market indexes. Most derivatives are characterized by high leverage, end quote. That means lots of debt. A derivative has no underlying value of its own. A derivative is essentially a side bet. Usually these side bets are highly leveraged. Now, I still have a hard time understanding this. Maybe you get it quicker than I. But anyway, if you add up the value of every stock on the planet, the entire market capitalization would be about $36 trillion. If you do the same process for bonds, you'd get a market capitalization of roughly $72 trillion. So what would that be? That'd be like $108 trillion. The notional value of the derivative market is roughly $1.4 quadrillion. Now, that number sounds like something out of Looney Tunes, so the author here is going to try to put it into perspective. $1.4 quadrillion is roughly 40 times the entire world's, all their stock markets combined, 40 times that. 10 times the value of every stock and every bond on the planet. 23 times world gross domestic product. The total value times 23 of everything produced, bought, sold, made on Earth. It's impossible to understand how much money a quadrillion is. If you started counting right now at $1 a second, it would take you 32 million years to count to $1 quadrillion. Do you get it? It's a big number. Yeah, the boys and girls down on Wall Street have gone completely and totally out of control. This is what they've done. This is what the Occupy movement is. And you teabaggers can kiss the ass of the entire world. You are so stupid. You are so ignorant. You don't know what the hell is going on. Do you, Mr. Jones? In an excellent article that he did on derivatives, Webster Tarpley described the pivotal role the derivatives now play in the global financial system. Quote, far from being some arcane or marginal activity, financial derivatives have come to represent the principal business of the financier oligarchy on Wall Street. Also at the City of London, that's the British Wall Street, Frankfurt, and other money centers, a concerted effort has been made by politicians and the news media to hide and camouflage the central role played by derivative speculation in the economic disasters of recent years. Journalists and public relations types have done everything possible to avoid even mentioning derivatives, coining phrases like toxic assets, exotic instruments, and, most notably, troubled assets, as in Troubled Assets Relief Program, or TARP, also known as the monstrous $800 billion bailout of Wall Street speculators, which was enacted in October 2008 with the support of Bush, Henry Paulson, John McCain, Sarah Palin, and the Obama Democrats. End quote, Webster Tarpley. Now, most people don't realize this, but derivatives were at the center of the financial crisis of 2008. They will almost certainly be at the center of the next financial crisis as well. And for many, alarm bells went off the other day when it was revealed that Bank of America has moved a big chunk of derivatives from its failing Merrill Lynch investment banking unit to its depository arm. So what does that mean? Well, it means what we said a minute ago. U.S. taxpayers will end up holding the bag. Because of the FDIC. This means that the investment bank's European derivatives exposure is now backstopped by U.S. taxpayers. Yeah, we're gonna pay for everything. We don't have any goddamn jobs, but we're gonna pay for everything. How are we gonna do it? We're gonna be on the hook for the rest of our lives and our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren forever and ever, world without end. Amen. Do you get this? This is capitalism. I don't know if I get it or not. But do you understand what's happened here? You're shouting, Malloy. Bank of America didn't get regulatory approval to do this. They just did it at the request of frightened counterparties who were involved in this also. Now the Fed and the FDIC are fighting as to whether this was sound. The Fed wants to, quote, give relief, end quote, to the bank's holding company, which is under heavy pressure. This is a direct transfer of risk to the taxpayer done by the bank without approval by regulators and without public input. Did you hear about this on the news? ABC, NBC, CBS, and KNBC? Probably not. Today, the notional value of all derivatives held by Bank of America comes to approximately $75 trillion. J.P. Morgan Chase is holding derivatives with a notional value of about $79 trillion. It's hard to conceive of such figures. Right now, the banks with the most exposure to derivatives are J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and HSBC Bank USA. Oh, Morgan Stanley, too. And you notice that these are some of the too big to fail banks. The biggest U.S. banks continue to grow, and they continue to get even more power. Back in 2002, the top 10 U.S. banks controlled 55% of all U.S. banking assets. Today, 9 years later, the top 10 banks control almost 80% of all U.S. banking assets. These banks have gotten so big and so powerful that if they collapsed, the entire global financial system ends. A while back, the New York Times published an article entitled, A Secretive Banking Elite Rules Trading in Derivatives. And that article exposed the steel-fisted control that the too-big-to-fail banks exert over the trading of derivatives. Just consider this following excerpt from the article, this little sentence here. On the third Wednesday of every month, the nine members of an elite Wall Street society gather in Midtown Manhattan. The men share a common goal: to protect the interests of big banks in the vast market for derivatives, one of the most profitable and controversial fields in finance. They also share a common secret. The details of their meetings, even their identities, have been strictly confidential, end quote. That was in the New York Times. So what institutions are represented at these meetings? I'll tell you when we come back. Before the hour. So, according to the New York Times, the following banks are involved in this plot to end the world: J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, and Citigroup. And you gotta wonder why these same five names seem to keep popping up time after time. Well, these are the banks that keep pouring money into the campaigns of politicians that supported the bailouts in 2008. And the banks know they'll bail them out again when the next financial crisis strikes. And it is inevitable that the same thing is going to happen again, except next time it may be on such a on a much grander scale. When the house finally does go bust, everybody loses, right? The governments of the world could step in and try to bail everyone out, but the reality is that when the derivatives market comes totally crashing down, there won't be any government on earth with enough money to put it back together again. Conclusion: a horrific derivatives crisis is coming. Oh, I know we all have enough to worry about, don't we? It's only a matter of time, though. Stay alert for any mention of the word derivatives or the term derivatives crisis in the news. When you hear those words, when the derivatives crisis arrives, things will start falling apart before your very eyes. Oh, my goodness. Not good news on a Tuesday evening, is it? Ah, damn. Damn, damn, damn. You know, well, Prairie 2 has been talking about, a lot of people have been talking about, you know, canned goods and so on and so forth. The truth is that canned goods will get you maybe over the first couple of few months hump, depending on how many canned goods you put away. But really and truly, I think the thing to do is to find a little piece of ground someplace, preferably up in the mountains. There's got to be mountains near where you live. If there aren't, move. Find a little place up in the mountains that has its own natural water source, maybe a little level ground where you can plant some stuff. Make sure you have a decent septic tank, septic system. If you have enough time here, make sure you have a solar system, solar energy system, heating panels, ways to heat your water, heat your house, cook, you know, so on and so forth. And maybe dig a real good root cellar or storage area where you can put all those canned goods that Prairie 2 has been telling you for 3 years to go buy, or hasn't been 4 years. And get a lot of books. Yeah, you know, books. You remember books, don't you? Because, you know, when the derivatives market crashes and the entire global economy comes tumbling down, you're not going to be able to turn on your Kindle. You just won't be able to do that. And also make sure that you establish or develop or form your own community of other folks who live up in the hills near you or, you know, in the same general area, for means of mutual protection or mutual survival, whatever you want to call it. Now, I realize it's going to be difficult to do. I mean, who's got any money to do this, right? That makes it rough. But the alternative, nah, all this stuff is just baloney, right? None of this is really happening. All right, follow me. Put your hands over your ears and say this. La, 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 la. None of this is happening. None of it. Couldn't be. It's impossible. Now, of course, the people who are going to crash the global economic system and destroy the lives of, literally destroy the lives, that means kill millions upon millions of people. They are safely ensconced. They have, you know, their little enclaves where nobody can touch them. The capitalists at the top of the heap. This is the 1/100th of 1%. You think the 1% is the enemy? Well, kinda. But the 1/100th of that 1%, they are the ones who sit at the very top of the heap, who have put the world financial system where it is. Now, there's a sunny side to all this. I realize it all sounds so bleak, so terrible, so awful. And for a lot of people, for millions of people, it will be exactly that. But the human species will survive this. And the people who do survive, I think, will finally figure out that capitalism or any kind of a money-based society is a sickness not unlike drug addiction, terminal drug addiction, and that we won't do it again. However, the 1/100th of 1% who survive all this will look around and say, well, all right, that's cool. That cleared off a few hundred million or a couple of billion of these scabs, these slugs, these punks that just keep getting in my way and polluting my beaches. And then they will try to set up another system not unlike this one. At which point, if any of this 1/100th of 1%, is within reach, grab him, strangle him immediately. Don't let this happen again. You understand what I'm saying? Is this coming through? Are you getting this? Can you hear me? Malloy advocates murder against the top 1/100th of 1% after the apocalypse. Right. Absolutely. But none of this is going to happen, is it? It's all fantasy. It's all just nonsense scenario. It's just the mad ramblings of a liberal talk show host on a Tuesday night who has a grand audience of what, 39? Or are we up to 40 by now? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm Dave.